On Women of Harry Potter, we make sure to spend time to bless women who we really look up to and also women who we have a lot of problems with. And so right now, as part of our pre-roll today, I would like to offer a blessing for Petunia Dursley. Petunia is a woman who's given an opportunity to love a boy that has dropped off on her door and has failed miserably in that attempt. I believe that we as a country are given the opportunity to right now love people who are on our doorstep, and we are also failing miserably. To that end, Harry Potter and the Sacred Text and Women of Harry Potter have launched a campaign to raise money for Raesis. Raesis offers legal representation and advocacy during cases of family separation and support social services for refugees. We are trying to raise $25,000 by Christmas, and we are already well on our way. If you go to harrypottersacredtext.com and click on the campaign, Don't Be a Dursley, you can join us in this effort to raise money for Raesis. A young boy was left on the stoop of his aunt's house at the mercy of relatives who didn't care about him. As fans of Harry Potter's story, we have an obligation to make sure that there are structures for children and adults who have nowhere safe to go.
I'm Ariana Nettleman, and this is the Women of Harry Potter. Today, we're lucky to be joined by Proma Khosla, who is an entertainment reporter for Mashable and worked many years with LeakyCon, is a big Harry Potter enthusiast, writer, dancer, producer extraordinaire. Thank you so much, Proma, for joining us.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
I actually heard about you through your rather popular Twitter post about the pronunciation of two specific characters in the Harry Potter text named. Would you say them for us, please?
Sure, I would be happy to. But I will say for the listeners that up until now, you've been saying them perfectly. So she's getting scared right now, but she has it.
I know, I got shy.
So we have the two Indian characters in Harry Potter who I'm Indian American, so I like latched onto that at a very young age. But their names, as written and as I read them for many years, are Parvati and Padma, which is like, there's like a soft consonant sound that everybody can't say, which is totally fine. But the vowel sounds have always been botched. Like people say, hey, this is going to hurt me to say it. People say Parvati and Padma. It's Parvati and Padma. So it's just like putting the emphasis on different syllables, which is something that people, like, especially like English speakers, do a lot with Indian names, not for any fault of their own, but because that's just like the language patterns that you grew up with, which is totally fine. But from my end, we also don't, like a lot of my friends and I, like we don't correct people right away. So then it just becomes ingrained. And it took me like 15 years of being a Harry Potter fan to finally just tweet something and pin it. And I was like, no, this is how you pronounce it. And then actually, if you click on the tweet, there's a whole thread where I just went off and I was like, here's a bunch of other things that we need to pronounce differently and just reclaim and fight for a little bit. So yeah, that's my big claim to fame is that tweet.
Sometimes maybe someone would argue that names get anglicized. Some people might say, well, we don't know a lot about Parvati and Padma's history in England. It could be pronounced either way. Like, we don't know actually how it would sound. But I think there's an argument to say that one should pronounce it with the Indian pronunciation, even if there is some ambiguity. And I'm wondering if you have anything to say about why you think it's important to pronounce them that way.
I do. Yeah, there are names that get anglicized or that evolve over time. This is one where, like, just knowing what I do about the culture, the most likely outcome is that Parvati and Padma are first or second generation, like British Indian girls, so that their parents or maybe their grandparents came over, like emigrated from India. And so the likely thing is that at home, like their parents or grandparents would be saying their names this way, and that these girls are in school repeatedly having people read their name off a piece of paper, say it wrong, and then they're just like too tired to correct it. Like by the time they get to Hogwarts, they've probably been to grade school or been homeschooled or something. And if they've been in school with other students, with other English students, they've probably already been through this whole thing and just been fine with it. And also, I think when you're a little kid, like maybe it doesn't matter in the same way. Maybe it doesn't occur to you what's happening. And then when you grow up hearing both versions of your name, the other one does also kind of become your name. I do, like, in some cases default, like I meet other Indian people who have their name, who pronounce their name differently, rather with different groups of people. And I will ask them, I'll be like, what do you prefer? Like, do you feel like this is also your name? Or is this the version of your name that you say to white people to make it easier? And the answers vary. They do.
Yeah. I will say that recently a friend said to me, and I am trying to take it to heart, that we learn to say a lot of really challenging names in mm-hmm. Western culture. We learn to say Tchaikovsky. We learn to say Foucault and Derrida. And like, it's just a question of exposure and practice. And like, as totally. You practice, you get better at recognizing pronunciation and being respectful of people's names.
Yeah, my favorite new thing to say whenever anyone struggles with truly any word, but in my case, it happens to often be Indian names, is that y'all learned how to say Daenerys Targaryen. We are capable of anything, like as a species. We're so great and smart. We can do this.
Well, beyond her name, there are so many wonderful things about Parvati. She is one of my favorite characters. In fact, I've done an episode blessing her on gossiping because I think it is underappreciated. And I'm wondering what particular thing you are blessing her for this episode.
Yeah, that's a really good jumping off point for, I think I would praise her, this is kind of broadly speaking, but like for being an individual, because we don't get to see, she's not like a primary character. We spend our time mainly with Harry, Ron, and Hermione. And so Parvati is this kind of like secondary or side character who you see consistently throughout the books, but you don't know very well. And a lot of the time it's through Harry's eyes or through Hermione's eyes. So she's painted as a gossip, but not necessarily in a good light. You know, like she loves divination, right. which is portrayed in a certain way because Harry, Ron, and Hermione don't really care for divination. And there's a really good, I love the web series Hermione Granger and the Quarter Life Crisis, in which mm-hmm. I think the creator of that, I spoke with her a couple years ago, and she was just like, no, you got to respect like Parvati and Lavender for just like being themselves, doing their thing, loving what they love, unironically. Like they cared about divination and they studied it. They were good at it. They actually saw stuff and got further with the subject than Harry, Ron, or Hermione were able to. It wasn't just like an idle hobby. And for my part, also like being Indian American growing up that way, I love that she does, like there are moments where, yeah, maybe this is J.K. Rowling kind of just like trying to get that little bit of culture in there. But I loved reading about this girl with like a long black braid who was like wearing bangles to the Yule Ball, because that was very much what I did when I was a teenager, was like try to add those little touches of it. I had really long hair my whole life. And like I, if anything, have just like continued and like gone even more in on that as an adult. So it was, I love that she was able to do that at her small school full of a lot of like English wizards. Like, go girl.
Yeah, I think my favorite thing about Parvati is that she is always raising her hand, like not as much as Hermione is. We see Hermione raise her hand a lot in these books, but if you track her across the series, she's often the first person to speak up and to ask a question. And the first time we actually really get to meet her and talk to her is when she's defending Neville from Draco when they're getting their first broom lesson. And I think, like, to me in that way, she's like, first of all, just like an excellent Gryffindor. She's like clearly braves, clearly standing up for her values, but also is like not afraid to make a little bit of room for herself and for what she likes and what she's interested in, to ask questions during lessons and to be unashamed of the things that she's interested in, like unicorns, like divination, these things which we often write off as like feminine and therefore not worthy of our time. But she is all in on and unapologetic about and very skilled and talented at.
Yes, absolutely. And I think especially juxtaposed with, because Hermione rejects a lot of that like traditionally feminine stuff, it is good to have another example, even if she's not a primary character, just like in there somewhere. And it takes some time. It takes like growing up, I think, and maybe growing out of just seeing the books through the main trio's perspective to see that and appreciate that. And she is, like you said, she's a great Gryffindor. She's loyal to her house. She's loyal to her friends. She knows her values. Like, they joined the DA up there right up front on the first day. This was recently pointed out to me and I like got teary about it. Yeah, she's very much there for her house and her friends and her values.
You mention seeing yourself in her, and I know that you're a culture critic and one, and you'll correct me on this maybe if I'm wrong, and one who is interested in Bollywood and in Indian portrayals in literature and in cinema. And I'm wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, you are correct. I care very much about the things that you mentioned, about representation and about, you know, growing up with Bollywood is interesting because that's like from India. So you see a very like representation means something different. Like everyone in those movies is Indian. So then it becomes like there are different types of nuance about like what social class is being portrayed, what skin types are being portrayed. There's like a whole I can critique Bollywood with a fine tooth comb as well. But in the West, it's always been about visibility. For a long time, it was just that. And it was any portrayal that I personally saw, I was just like, yay, like brown people, we are here and we exist, and for a long time didn't question in what way we exist or what type of character it was, if it was stereotypical or offensive or just entirely fabricated even. And in the past, I would say like 10 years or so, it's been more about actually now that we're here, what are we showing? Not more about representation than visibility. So I loved reading Harry Potter and getting the visibility from Parvati and Padma. And I think that's still a pretty good representation as well. Like, they're not big characters, but like, I didn't read Harry Potter because I thought like an Indian girl was going to go on these adventures in wizarding school. It's cool, but also that happened kind of on the side. And so I read it for the story and for Harry's journey and all of that, and got to sometimes, you know, picture someone who looked like me waving a wand. And that was such a cool thing, like from when they made the movies, having that visual representation as well.
As you get older, is there any way in which you wish that they had been represented differently, or feel particularly good about the way in which they are represented?
I do. We talk about this at LeakyCon at least every year. I'm on some panel where I'm like, you know what? I feel maybe because I'm also like a smaller minority, particularly in the United States, where I'm like, I'm still just like glad to be at the party. And I do think it was a good representation. It's not negative in terms of anything cultural, except if we get into the movies and we talk about just like the really horrible, horrific outfits that they put them in. That is offensive to me personally. if I could change the portrayal, it would be in the movies to let Parvati and Padma be separate people and be in their proper houses and have more of an identity than just kind of like flirting with Harry and then wearing those actually abhorrent outfits to the ball. I cannot stress this enough. They're so awful.
Yeah, they have a really interesting little moment at the Yule Ball. We had a voicemail recently on our other show, Harry Potter and the Sacred Text, where a woman very generously called in and said, I was disappointed that you didn't talk more about the way in which Padma and Parvati were tokenized and like kind of brought into the ball and then ignored. And like, I really had struggled with that as a reader and wished that you had talked about it. And that was part of our excitement about getting you on Women of Harry Potter to talk about Parvati, because I think there are things that I just don't see because I wasn't actively projecting myself into those characters. But once you start to do that work, you know, you start to see the ways in which you get pushed to the side a little bit.
Yeah, they're definitely super diluted in the movie. Like in the, it almost doesn't register sometimes because I think of the book so much. But yeah, in the book, it is a whole date night with Parvati, Padma, Harry, and Ron. Like, they're mentioned in every scene. They get annoyed, and you see it from their perspective too, a little bit more. And they also just both are built out better as like having their own personality and identity. So it feels very real. And in the movie, yeah, it is kind of just like, first of all, they appear out of nowhere because Warner Brothers did not bother casting them before, or they cast them in like the third movie and then recast them. Right. So they appear out of nowhere. They're suddenly very interested in Harry, who like, in the books, Parvati and Padma are the ones being sought after. They're they're explicitly the prettiest girls in the year, which I loved, which was so just random and cool and like a fun, flattering thing. Seamus and Dean are jealous that Harry and Ron somehow managed to like reach up and land dates with these girls. Parvati and Padma are the ones settling. That is very clear from the book.
And they make it clear during the ball as well when they're like, oh, you're not going to pay attention to us? Great. We have new boyfriends over at Durmstrang now.
Yeah, they have that whole circle of Durmstrang boys around, and Beauxbatons boys too, because they're boys at that school in the book. So they are just like holding court at the Yule Ball. And I would have actually loved that scene as just like a great flex. As far as tokenism also, the Yule Ball decision to dress every person of color in like ethnic wear is a fascinating one. Because again, I just remember this, but speaking of the ball at LeakyCon or at like Harry Potter conventions, so I started, I would say from like 2007 to 2009, I wore explicitly like fully Indian formal wear. And the first year I dressed up, my friend Rashmi, who's Indian, she was also there at the con. This was at Prophecy in 2007. And she also wore, we both wore langas, which are like long skirts with a blouse and a piece of cloth across it. It's basically what they wear. It's a style of outfit that Parvati and Padma wear in the movie. It's just we didn't wear ugly ones. We wore like our own stuff that we had. And they weren't matchy in color or anything, like kind of similar style even. And we walked in, and we also look very different. We walked in and everyone at the ball was like, oh, you're dressed as the twins. And that was never,
oh my,
that was never our intention. We were like, no, we'll wear this because they wore that and because like it's like these characters made it cool for us to wear Indian formal wear to like a dance with a bunch of people who aren't also wearing it. And repeatedly it happened. And then eventually, I think I don't feel good about this, but we entered a costume contest and we won. Wearing our own formal wear that we like wear to weddings and events and like normal things with our friends and family. And that was a weird thing. So after that, like the following conventions where I wore formal wear, I was the only one. So that was less likely to happen. Maybe one or two people would be like, oh, is that are you dressed up as? And I was like, nope, different color, different person, not a thing. But that was a weird thing that happened the first time. And it was around, I felt weird about it because I remember in middle school, there were some Indian girls in my grade who wore their formal wear on Halloween. And I really hated that. I called them out on it. I was like, this is our culture. This isn't a costume, before that was like a trendy phrase. And then I was like, oh no, I did that at this convention and I didn't even mean to. I didn't even know I was doing it.
I mean, people did that to you at the convention.
Yeah. And then, I mean, then maybe this is that example of me being like tired and I didn't fight it.
Exactly.
Or it was like, it was fun. It didn't feel like a bad thing. Like no one was being malicious, but Rashmi and I were both like, oh, did we? We didn't mean to. Also, we're not identical twins, but thanks, I guess. Like, have a good night. I think for a lot of people also who were there, this may have been, I mean, I don't know anyone's particular story, but this might have been their first time ever seeing an Indian woman in formal wear, to be quite honest.
Exactly. And maybe the only association they really had with that was the movies and the books.
Yeah. I don't think that would, this is very unlikely that it would happen now. Like, I don't think anyone at a convention would do that if I and another Indian girl showed up in formal wear. But I haven't tested it, so maybe I will.
But I think the implication of that, the personal expression versus like a costume expression, like needs to be pulled apart. I think that's true in terms of wearing clothing appropriate for your culture, that like people will interpret that as a costume, even outside of a con setting, like in daily life. But I also think that that's true of wearing like, you know, like clothing of different genders, you know, that like we need to like expand like our understanding of like how to interpret what people are wearing as expressions of themselves. Like that line between expression and costume is really interesting. There's something about the idea of costume that's like, that's patronizing, right? It's like derogatory. It's like you're trying something on rather than being who you are.
We should never underestimate the value of just like shutting up a little, not to be rude, but sometimes it's okay to just tell someone, and this goes for gendered clothing as well as cultural clothing, to be like, I love that outfit. End of sentence, end of that interaction. You don't have to project what it is or where it came from or if it's a costume or not. Or if you have those thoughts, ask. Make it a question and not a statement. I guess people did ask us if we were dressed up as Parvati and Padma, like kind of put that sentiment out there. But in a lot of cases, yeah, it's okay to just be like, oh, I love that. Like, what made you want to wear that? You know, just something like that.
Yeah. And I think that's also the line between like appreciation and fetishization, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there somewhere else in the text that you want to point us to in thinking about Parvati's individuality and what you love about her?
I was recently on the Jilted Indian podcast and they came to LeakyCon. At their panel, they discussed the fact that Parvati and Padma were among the first to sign up for Dumbledore's army. And I really, you know, I knew that, but just kind of recognizing it and internalizing it really affected me.
Mm-hmm.
In book five, you hear about their parents wanting to take them out of school and all of that. In book six, they eventually do leave. I always got the impression that they wanted to stay, and that was more pressure from the family out of their safety. And I know that she's present, like, they're present at the end of Half-Blood Prince. They're present particularly at the Battle of Hogwarts. Like, we don't give enough credit because it's every character we know, but to these just like children, these teenagers fighting actually life or death, good or evil. And I think any character that was present there, whatever their contribution, like that's huge. And that's, you know, we should recognize that.
And I think that's a testament to like her critical mind that when she was in Professor Binns' class, she was saying, well, doesn't someone have to use dark magic to open the Chamber of Secrets?
Yes, sorry, that was the moment I was thinking of when you brought up class earlier and her asking questions. The questions she asked, I'm so glad you mentioned it, like in Professor Binns' class about the Chamber of Secrets, juxtaposed with Hermione and just juxtaposed with everyone else, because everyone's bringing different layers of like fear and concern to this. So I do like that one a lot. And then, yeah, with Umbridge, same thing. It's like the Gryffindors band together, like, Harry as a character should be so much tighter with his whole house. I go on about this a lot. We're like, he should be really close with his house. He should be so close with his Quidditch team. And he just stays with his two friends because it's like a tighter narrative.
Right.
But he would totally like Parvati is someone who he's going to be friends with. Or I don't know. I feel like based on my experience of school and all, who he would know in some capacity for his entire life. There are very few people who know you when you're like a kid or a teenager, like in those formative years, who you see every day in school or in class. And whether or not you stay best friends or stay in touch, that's something you will never unshare.
Yeah, and she's clearly his type of person because she's like justice oriented and like curious and good at her schoolwork. Like they could have been very close, except he's so interiorly focused and so focused on Ron and Hermione that like he can't widen his friend group to the people who might actually be valuable to him.
And crucially, she was his first date.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, his first ever date.
Yeah. I think my coworker actually tweeted about this before we were coworkers. Like, I started following her on Twitter, I'm pretty sure, Alexis Ned, because she tweeted that until Ginny, Harry Potter canonically only dates women of color.
So interesting. Yes.
Loved that. I mean, he went on two dates, but still.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, and I don't know what to make of that. Do you have anything to make of that?
I think it's pretty cool. But again, it was two dates with two girls. And I'm sure if you asked either girl, they would be like, yeah, that was the worst date of my life. So.
Well, I wanted to point back to Professor Binns because it's just occurred to me, and I'm so dumb for not thinking of it earlier. But because of our conversation about names, he calls her Miss Pennyfeather. Mm-hmm. And I was always like, that's because he's old and a ghost and doesn't really care about his students. But like, it could easily also be because he struggles with her name and is like not willing to put the energy into learning her name properly.
Yeah, I will say though, because of your first point, that he is obviously not willing to put that energy into learning anyone's name. And it's so funny because he makes it like, he takes it from a 5-letter last name to like a 12-letter last name, just like makes it harder. That's the thing that also happens a lot with South Asian names is people see it and it's confusing and then they make it a lot harder as it's coming out of their mouth. Also, to truly blow your mind, it's actually not Patil either. The actual last name, P-A-T-I-L, is pronounced Patil, and it's from a specific state in North India. So is Patel. Patel with an E is from the state of Gujarat. Patil with an I is from Maharashtra, which is where like Mumbai is located. So yeah, it gets even more complicated.
Thank you. I'm learning so much. So we end every episode with a quiz.
Oh boy.
And this week's quiz is about something called Twins Day, which is held annually on the first full weekend in August in Twinsburg, Ohio, to celebrate biological twins and other multiples. It's the largest annual gathering of twins in the world. My first question for you is, what is the Twins Day parade called? A, the Double Trouble Parade. B, the Double Take Parade. C, the Better Together Parade. Or D, the Two It's Better Than One Parade.
Oh, man. I hope it's the Double Trouble Parade. I think that's fun.
You're close. It's the Double Take Parade.
Oh, okay.
My second question for you is that Twinsburg, Ohio is named such because A, it is sister cities with Twinsburg, Germany. B, it looks identical on both sides of the river that runs through it. C, twin brothers demand that it be renamed in return for their philanthropy. Or D, the old fabric company that had its mill there was for a company called Twinnings.
The middle two options sound like the most fun, but, you know, I'm going to go with Twinnings. I'm going to shake it up a little.
It is one of the middle two options. It's the twin brothers who demanded it.
Oh, good.
I know. It's so lovely.
Okay, I'm glad.
Moses and Aaron Wilcox, they bought the land in 1819 and donated 6 acres of it for a town square, and in return, they renamed the city Millsville to Twinsburg.
That's fun.
And because of them, now there's this annual event that happens there.
Oh, good for them.
I know. I wish I knew more about the Wilcoxes. I feel like they seem like Fred and George kinds of twins more than Padma and Parvati.
Yeah, instead of naming the town after each other or after their last name, naming it Twinsburg.
Yeah, like it could have been Wilcoxville, but like they just wanted to for it to be about them and their relationship. I think there's something beautiful about that.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, our last question. There are voluntary twin scientific studies that happen at Twins Day. Twin studies have been going on in all of recorded history. What is not one of the things that we have learned from twin studies? A, life expectancy has more to do with life choices than genetics. B, astrology has important scientific patterns assigned to birth times. C, height is entirely genetic. D, parental choices can lead to the onset of mental health issues.
Oh my gosh, my parents are scientists and I can feel the pressure from hundreds of miles away. The second one, the astrology one, that's not something we learned.
Yeah, that's true. I think Parvati and Lavender would be really disappointed to hear that. But what's interesting is that that's something that's routinely tested. Like they often test astrology in twin studies, but it never comes out as true.
Hmm.
Proma, thank you so much for coming on and blessing Parvati with us. I feel like I learned a lot and also just grew in my appreciation for her. She's definitely in the top three of my favorite characters. I love her so much. And it's just such a joy to spend time thinking about her with you. And I'm going to work really hard to say their names correctly in the future.
You have, at least for the 30 minutes we've been talking, you've been doing great. I'm very impressed. And I love that she's one of your favorite characters. That makes me so happy.
Where can our listeners go and find you and follow you if they want to get you in their feeds and hear all of your hot takes?
Ooh, so I actually just made my own website. So that's fun. So if you just do promakhosla.com. And then I'm on social media, Twitter and Instagram as promawhatup. And I tweet weird stuff about Harry Potter all the time. And yeah, come hang.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
This has been Women of Harry Potter. We are executive produced by me, Ariana Nellman, and Vanessa Zoltan, and produced and edited by Chelsea Erson. We are a Not Sorry production, and our music is by Nick Bull. We'll see you here again in 2 weeks' time.